Hello, a very good day to you all, and welcome back to Marker in English's podcast, Eye on La Liga, bringing you the news and views from around the world of Spanish football. On this fine Monday, we get to look back at another European Cup for Los Blancos, getting the job done in Cardiff against Juventus in some style as well. Cristiano Ronaldo, the numbers do not lie, according to him. Is anybody going to start making the claim that he's better than Lionel Messi and perhaps the greatest player we've ever seen? Of course, that's going around all of the newspapers and football websites of the big bad world of the international media. But we're going to get away from that topic, break down the game and have a look ahead to the summer coming up as well with the La Liga sides. And of course, look at Barcelona under the new manager, Ernesto Valverde. What will he bring after his time in Bilbao at the Catalan Giants? Joining me, Ollie Wilson, on the show today are some of our regular guests and a new face as well on the podcast, Mark Mayo, of course, that Mark Mayo on the line in the studio. We get to actually meet face to face now, Mark, as opposed to down the Skype lines. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm well, good, thank you. It's a lovely day here in London, nice and warm, so it's good to be here.
We will not be mentioning anything about playoff finals or Reading or penalty shootouts or anything like that for Mark, so we'll be nice and kind.
It's best to just avoid English football in general at the moment, isn't it?
Seems about fair. It's a good job we're doing La Liga this week. Down the Skype line as well, another regular on the show, Mr. Simon Harrison at Simon H Football. He's trying to still bring that branding on the email addresses as well with his little Simon H Football logo. I still love it, mate. How are you doing, Si?
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, I'm feeling a bit left out with being on the line with some of you guys in the studio. But, you know, I'm in Spain and you're enjoying a bit of England, so... Yeah, I think I might win on that side of the coin.
Yeah, you've been winning on that side of the coin for the last few weeks now, mate. And I've heard plenty about your travels around Spain, and you're off to Poland as well. So the summer of touring around Europe doesn't really end for you either. So, yeah, give us our day in the studio for once, please, my friend. And as well in the studio today, the man who is really the mastermind behind plenty of marker.com/EN, Mr. Dov Chiavone on the, I was about to say on the line, but obviously right in front of me here. Dov, how are you doing, mate?
I'm not too bad. It's good to be kind of here, seeing how you do all this, because I normally just listen and cast a
judge
skeptical eye over it
and shout at us when it goes bad.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So now I'm here to make sure it all goes right first time and everybody's doing what they should be doing.
Yeah, and unfortunately as well, because we're in the studio, we can't really pause the recording and redo stuff or anything like that. So we've got to make sure our answers and discussion points are kind of on point and be very organised with the boss in the house at the moment. So there's no pressure on anybody here, Dov. Thanks for coming down.
None at all.
Everyone just look busy.
I've even got notes on a piece of paper here. Never normally make them, but yeah, we're all good.
I thought that. I was sure that was the case.
So let's dive straight into it then. Let's talk about the Champions League final in Cardiff. And I guess we should start with you, Dov, because you were there at the game. You got to see it in the flesh, and a performance that has been lauded for Real Madrid, just dominant against Juventus. Are you surprised at how dominant Real Madrid were in that game? Because I think going into the kickoff, a lot of people were starting to come around to the idea that actually this Juve side defensively was set up to be able to take on this Real Madrid side and halt that dominant attack of theirs.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, including myself, thought that Juventus were the favourites going into this game. I did think that they were the most complete side in Europe. Real Madrid obviously kind of threw that out the window, so it makes me look a bit stupid and got into it. And I think every kind of radio program, TV thing I did beforehand, I was adamant that this Juventus team were the team that could break Real Madrid down and eventually go on and win it. And they made a good hash of it in the first half, I thought. Apart from maybe a 10-minute spell when Real Madrid scored, I thought Juventus were even maybe a little bit better in the first half. But then in the second half, they just completely fell apart, which is something that they've not done all season. And I think possibly one of the reasons for that is that's, you'd say, maybe the first real test that they've had the whole year. Because in Serie A, they always win. The Juventus don't lose. It doesn't matter who they play. And then when they played Barcelona, people thought that might be a bit of a difficult one for them. And essentially, they brushed them aside relatively easily. And then have come up against Real Madrid, the champions of Spain, and after 45 minutes, fell apart.
If anything, then it just highlights how good this Real Madrid side are compared to the rest of around them in Europe, because it's something we've touched on in terms of Paris Saint-Germain not getting tested and regularly in their Ligue 1 campaign. Juventus have the same struggles in Italy, in that it's not an easy league for them to walk.
It is really easy for them to walk. They've walked it every year for the last 5 years. And this year, they had it won by December, although people will try and tell you that there was a Scudetto race. There was never a Scudetto race. It was never. Once they got about seven, I think at one point they were 11 points clear. After that, they were just basically managing the season to make sure they won the Coppa Italia and got to the final of the Champions League, which they did both.
But it does still show that this Real Madrid side, arguably, as we've touched on the podcast before, Mike, in terms of its depth and quality running throughout, Zidane's been able to change things around. And it's a difficult side to be able to predict how they're going to come at you when you've got that depth and quality. And something that Juventus may have struggled with in their preparation, because they went back to this three at the back as well, Juventus, which we've actually seen them move away from since Allegri's come in and Conte's kind of that three at the back with the wing-backs has fallen at the wayside slightly for them. And it was odd to see them going back to that, almost relatively untested against this sort of opposition this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the thing is with looking at Real Madrid is that for the start of the season, you'd have picked the BBC in a 4-3-3 and it was all kind of very well known. But towards the end of the year, it actually became a bit difficult to predict because we didn't know if Bale was going to start. And Isco was sort of, you think of where he was at the start of the season, he's relatively come out of nowhere to show himself as a real first team threat. And then off the bench, you've got people like Marco Asensio, who still have that kind of unknown quantity. I still think that he's kind of been played out of position. So when Allegri looks at Real Madrid and how they were going to set up, he kind of thought that maybe they're going to play a diamond, maybe they'll play a 4-3-3. But ultimately, there's not many sort of definites about them. There's quite a few variables. You know that Marcelo's going to get down the left wing. You know that they're going to have Modric and Cruz in the middle. But the exact way that they score goals, whether that's putting balls in the box, whether that's intricate play or counter-attacks, they're kind of good enough at all of them for it all to be a threat.
Well, he said that in the press conference before the game, when he was talking about is Bale or Isco going to play. And when he was talking about Bale, he said if Bale plays, Real Madrid are a lot more predictable.
Yeah.
But with Isco, he said Isco's a much more unpredictable player. So obviously that would be something he can't really prepare for. If you've got a guy you don't know what he's going to do, then how do you counteract that?
Well, and you look at the starting 11 that Real Madrid put out this weekend, and a year ago, you'd have said this is a four at the back, two holding, three behind a main forward, with Benzema leading the line, Ronaldo one side, Isco on the other, and Modric just sat in front of Casemiro and Toni Kroos, perhaps. But suddenly now, everybody says, no, this is actually a two up top with Benzema and Ronaldo. But then you also see Benzema, as we saw in the Champions League semi-final against Atletico Madrid, he's happy to drift out wide a bit more and kind of evolve his game to make sure that he's able to start in this 11 for Zidane at the moment. It's so versatile and fluid, it's difficult to make out what Madrid are going to come at you with at points.
Yeah, I mean, talking about the two up top, if you look at the average positions of Real Madrid in the game, it actually almost comes out as like a 2-1-4-1-2 with Isco sitting behind Ronaldo and Benzema. And every time when I would been at the stadium, every time there was a ball out wide or Isco had the ball, Ronaldo and Benzema both would go and stand in the box. There wasn't maybe one waiting on the wing. They were both there ready for a cross or a cutback or something like that every time.
It's been extraordinary seeing how Zidane has evolved this side. Simon, just want to bring you in on this one. In terms of Zidane, you're going to look at his record already as a manager, relatively new, still in the job, 18 months at Real Madrid, two European titles, a La Liga title as well this season, which was the one that they all wanted. But he's been lauded not just for his rotation policy this year, but how close he is to this side. And it's something I think that some other managers now are hinting that they want to emulate, that Zidane is so almost in contact with this squad, which is why he's been able to have the rotation. Yes, there's been some disgruntled characters at Madrid, and we'll come on to that in a moment. But he's absolutely nailed this job in terms of dealing with a big club.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the idea of the best way to, you know, control the Galacticos is to have a Galactico in charge. I mean, he's walked the walk. He scored goals in finals, you know, that are up there with what Mandzukic managed to pull off. And yeah, I mean, he's definitely got the balance right in terms of chemistry, in terms of the mental side of things. But the only worry for me, I mean, you kind of alluded to it with what you just said, but if next season, is it feasible for this to, you know, roll on for another year? Because when you've got a squad that has such talent and has so many players with egos that know that they can be, you know, big players, they can probably walk into a lot of other teams in Europe and be a star, you wonder whether they'll be happy to, you know, be part of this big squad that's got a lot of talent, but maybe play that backseat role. So the thing I would say, the big question, it's not Zidane anymore. Maybe before people would question him, but I mean, he's got the trophies to back up what he's been doing at Real Madrid. I think the big question is whether it is sustainable and whether it might become, with the same players, if they manage to keep hold of everyone, would it maybe become a little bit toxic? Would it break up the group? I think that's really the big thing heading into the summer.
Do you not think, though, that, that Zidane's got the personality to be able to manage that?
I mean, I would definitely think he commands the respect. I'd definitely say that, you know, maybe there'd just be a couple of more peripheral players who've been a bit more outward in what they've been saying. So maybe your Alvaro Morata's, your James Rodriguez. I think the rest of the group are more or less probably happy to stick around. But if you have these personalities where Morata has said that he needs to play more, with James, who obviously has reacted angrily to being substituted, that kind of thing, you wonder whether if these players are kind of held for the good of Real Madrid, but maybe not for the good of their own careers, whether it would just become more of a problem. And then obviously with players such as Marco Asensio or Lucas Vasquez, where they are quite young, they do get used, maybe not as much as they would like, and maybe they don't start as much as they would like, whether they sort of see their future away from the club if they're not given, you know, those big bursts. Because Real Madrid, it is a big club, but we are kind of in an era in football, I think, where people start to think more about themselves maybe rather than a collective when it comes to spending multiple seasons at the club, unless perhaps you're Coco.
Well, it's that toss-up as well. If you're a young player, you want and you need game time to be able to learn and progress the football that you play. And if you're a young player at a big club like that, it's going to be very difficult to get that regular game time, and perhaps a spell away on loan is needed. And then if that doesn't perhaps work out quite as well, suddenly your time at the club is done anyway. Or you can try and stay, learn from the best in training. And that will be interesting for particularly someone like Marcus Asensio, of how his career is going to go. If he's willing to stick it out and try and learn from the best on the training ground and have that limited game time in terms of go on Simon mate may have just lost Simon just for a moment there, but in terms of Zidane and being perhaps the man to be able to keep this squad together, I think, as Simon touched on there, we've already seen that. Look at the way James Rodriguez, who was a megastar coming out of the World Cup with Colombia, you know, Golden Boot winner, went to Real Madrid, kicked on very nicely, has played well at times this season. But, you could have the theme tune from the end of the Hulk kind of thing with him walking out towards the bus all alone, as we showed on marca.com/EN. I mean, this is a guy that suddenly feels almost completely isolated. He's got the pictures of him with the trophy and he's smiling, but the group photos, I mean, where's James? Where's the smile? It's just not there. So there are always going to be fractures when you've got these big players. And I don't think even Zidane, there's any manager that can kind of keep hold of that.
Yeah, and I think that the thing is that Zidane so far, you think of the players that he's kind of taken on, as it were. Alvaro Morata is obviously quite young, has just joined. James Rodriguez, I don't think he's that much of a personality within the Real dressing room. Whereas, you know, if he takes on someone like Benzema, if he takes on a Ronaldo, could have a dodgy start next season. If he takes him on, if he takes on Sergio Ramos after a bad bit of form, that's when you'll see this kind of potentially toxic atmosphere that Simon's talking about. And that's when he'll have a real job on his hands. He's quite lucky in a sense at the moment that all his major players are firing, and that's not the luxury that every manager has every day of the week, and that's going to be a big testing moment if and when it does happen.
And he took on a dressing room that was so fractured. He was always... Somebody had to be able to repair that Real Madrid dressing room after what had happened with Mourinho, with Rafa Benitez, etc. The club was very unhappy about the way the manager had been taking things forward previously before Zidane came in. And he was primed, just remember, to set up this Real and set up to take this Real Madrid job. So he was expected to succeed, as he has done, because all the tools were there for him to do it. He had the link with the club, he had the link with the players, he'd been set and ready to take this job on, and he had a great squad which they'd built. They just didn't have that unity, and he was the man that they knew that they could unite around him.
It was an interesting thing he said in the post-match press conference, because he was asked about a couple of times, is he the best coach in the world? How great a coach is he? And he said, well, I've got a bit lucky, almost, like you say. Because he said before, he said himself that he was a rubbish coach before. So I think he even knows that he has maybe some limitations in that area. But he's come into a situation where, almost like you say, everything's there and ready for him to...
It's the same as Barcelona's golden generation. You know, that is a perfect kind of amalgamation of the young talent coming through at the right time with the right managers in the right place, and football was ready for that sort of style of football to be played, and they had these young players that were ready to play that sort of football. And now you're seeing the problems with Barcelona of that starting to slip away. Zidane, same thing, walks into this melting pot of everything's there, set up, ready to go, and suddenly it all slips away. It's going to be a really interesting summer, I think, of how they approach, A, if the likes of Morata, he says that he wants to kind of still be around, but he definitely wants game time because of the World Cup coming up. But obviously, James looks like he's long gone, and to be honest, looked like he was gone when he came off against Sevilla before the season was done. This is going to be replacing those and keeping that depth, because it's the squad depth that has proved dividends in the long run of being able to get a league and European Cup double for the first time since 1958. Just wanted to throw a little stat in there and show Dov that I did the research this week. Let's talk about the game very quickly in that second half then, Dov, because obviously you were there and saw it playing out. You mentioned that Juventus were completely smothered in that game. I mean, how do you go about smothering this Juventus side that has caused problems for so many of the big sides in Europe, and Madrid did it so effectively?
It wasn't a tactical thing, which is weird to say, because Juventus are so well drilled in their formations, even if they do play three at the back, they know how to play it. Like, they could do it with their eyes shut and still be quite a formidable team. But it was mentally, they just weren't there. And I think physically as well. I think, like I say, the test, they haven't had a test like this, and I think a mental test of a team, especially in the start of the second half, Real Madrid just bombarded the Juve box and almost had them pinned back onto the edge of their own box as well. And then physically, Sami Khedira, Miralem Pjanic couldn't live with Kroos, Modric and Casemiro. And that was something I think Zidane also pointed out as well, that physically his team were much better, or not much better prepared, but a little bit better prepared. And I think overall, when you've got kind of that relentlessness, if you're a team that maybe isn't used to winning European Cups like Juventus are, because that's the seventh loss they've had in the final, which is unbelievable, thinking how successful they are in Italy, then maybe that does have an effect. And like a lot of these players, like Paulo Dybala, who there was a lot of hype around him, he was almost anonymous. And Higuain had his usual, where was Higuain in the final? Nobody knows. So some of, like a few of the big players didn't step up, and some of the younger ones whose first time it was in the Champions League final, the pressure almost got to them a little bit. And I think it was more kind of those issues, mental and physical, that played against Juve rather than Zidane being some crazy tactical mastermind.
I mean, I would have thought if you're a Juventus player going into the dressing room at halftime, having seen Mandzukic pull off that goal on 27 minutes, you'd think anything is possible, because of all the people you expect to crop up with that sort of goal in a Champions League final, Mandzukic on my list of these two squads was pretty far down, and probably in like the bottom third kind of thing of a guy that had that in his locker.
I've got my statistic, right, to show you that I did my research as well, right? Mandzukic, in the last two seasons, has not lost a game that he scored in for either Croatia or Juve until the Champions League. So,
and you'd be frustrated because that's probably the best goal he'll ever score as well, to lose that game.
That's
the best one. That's the best one. And he's written lost.
All right. Well, it wouldn't be a big game for Real Madrid without talking about the king of the capital, Sergio Ramos. Controversy, to say the least, in terms of the way Cuadrado picked up his second yellow card. Mark is already shaking his head in frustration and disgust. So, Mark, Sergio Ramos.
It's just disappointing, isn't it? Because I had the same, to a lesser extent, feeling when Nacho scored that goal against Sevilla a few weeks ago with the quickly taken free kick. And I'm just kind of sitting there thinking, some people will be really impressed with it and think, oh, well, they've won the game because of it. But you just kind of have to sit back and ask, is that really why we play football? Do we actually play football because...
Purist.
Right, because of those because of those moments. And is that actually... The thing is that if there would have been some sort of hint of a stamp, I probably wouldn't really mind the whole him going down. But he literally does just stroll past him in the way that you would walk past an old lady in the street. And I'd be disappointed if the old lady went down that theatrically. And, you know, I wouldn't consider myself too much of a purist, but especially when the game is won, I think it's just unnecessary.
That's what I think. It felt completely unnecessary for the way... I mean, Simon, you must have been watching that. The reaction in Spain can't be too positive for Sergio Ramos's antics right at the end of the game.
Well, it was rather interesting. I chose to actually watch the game out in a bar, and it was quite split down the middle in terms of people who were supporting Real Madrid and people who clearly just didn't really have an affinity with Juventus, but just didn't like Real Madrid, it seemed like. So when that happened, I think it was more disbelief. Like, people couldn't really understand what the referee had actually sent him off for at first. And I'm definitely in the same boat. It's a strange one, because obviously you can look at it from the way where, well, I assume, to be honest, when Sergio Ramos got booked on about the half hour mark, I thought that it would be him. If there was going to be anyone that was going to be sent off in that game, it might have been him. But obviously it's made life a little bit easier for his team. But at the same time, it kind of adds this little sour footnote to the Champions League. I mean, I can't say that anyone really who supports Real Madrid or any of the players will have even given it a second thought as soon as it's happened. But I think for the neutral, it definitely sort of struck a bit of a bad chord with people who, I don't know. I think it's kind of the whole idea of diving and all that side of the game. Obviously, it's a bit controversial. It got the job done. It really took all of the sting out of the game. But at the same time, you've got to just think, I mean, would you not be embarrassed to go down like that?
I don't think he's embarrassed one bit. I think that's the problem.
He's running around with the Champions League trophy. He doesn't care if he's been sent off.
But it's always this Real Madrid thing. It always seemed like 4 years ago there was a big divide. It was the good versus evil. It was good Barcelona playing football the right way against Real Madrid, frustrated that Barca were having all the success and moaning and complaining about
it. When Atletico came through, they were very much the good Atletico, like the honest underdog sort of thing.
Yeah,
as well,
yeah. Everybody liked kind of the plucky character of Simeone and this feisty side that came up and disrupted the whole top two system in La Liga. And then just as Madrid started to move towards being the good side in Spanish football, you know, they have been playing wonderful football, very likeable manager. Even Ronaldo's moaning has died down a bit, and definitely Piqué has stepped up his moaning game a fair bit about referees and officiating in La Liga this season. And just as you think that change is going to be and Barca are suddenly like the slightly negative side in that top two, something like this happens and everyone goes, oh no, there's classic Real Madrid. Sergio Ramos, there it is for you right there, doing every little dirty trick.
The Imperial Death March to start every time stuff like that happens, and you're just like, right, here we go. Real Madrid are back again.
It's a stroke on the shoulder that he then clutching. Yeah, it's...
To be honest, I really would have liked to have seen Pepe's reaction on the bench. I'm sure that you probably would have celebrated it more than the actual trophy itself.
I think Pepe probably fell over as well. We just didn't get the camera on him in time, did we?
Yeah, I mean, two wonderful players, but also two scumbags. In some people's eyes.
This is King Sergio you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah, I know. And unfortunately, he is holding the Champions League trophy at the end of it. And he does have the crown at Cibeles and everything. So you can't really blame him for it. And he comes up time and time again with big goals for the club as well. And when they need him, he is somehow always there. Let's just talk quickly about Madrid going forward. We touched on the transfer policies and everything. This is, are we getting into a dynasty of European football first and foremost? Three trophies in 4 years for Real Madrid, and that legacy of where this club is right now. If it had a couple more La Liga titles in there, you'd say it's without a doubt the best side in the world. I think would be difficult to argue against that. Ronaldo said count the numbers. And then you go into this summer where there's still just a few questions about the transfer signings and particularly the goalkeepers as well, and David De Gea set to apparently imminently arrive according to some papers. Whether United actually kick up a bit of a fuss about keeping hold of him, we don't know, but it seems like his future is destined to come. Yet Keylor Navas, everybody wants to see him stick around between the posts for another year or so at Madrid. Mark, what's going on with this dynasty first and foremost? There was a lot in that, I apologise.
Well, in terms of dynasty, I think that you're right, the La Liga titles do need to come a bit more, and I think they'll probably win La Liga next year because Barcelona in transition, Atletico aren't going to get close.
Here come the predictions from Mark early on that we can reflect.
If that's wrong, it'll be interesting to see how it happens. So that's kind of done dust as far as I can tell. In terms of Champions League, you've got to ask about who's better. Barcelona, as I say, a bit of transition. We don't know what they're going to be like. Bayern, Juve, as we've touched on, are going to continually come up against this fact that Bundesliga and Serie A don't test them enough to bring them to that level. And the Premier League teams are the unknown quantity as well. Because
Antonio Conte at Chelsea.
Well,
that's what he wants, the Champions League.
It will be interesting. And Jose Mourinho in the Champions League next year as well with United. So
yeah, that'll be interesting to watch, won't it?
Yeah, so is Mauang Fellaini going to be the hero next year? Who knows? Is he going to do a Man City kit? I think it's only really the Premier League teams I think are going to test them next year. Because as I say, Bayern and Juve peaked, in my opinion. So in terms of bringing a dynasty about, there's certainly a potential for them to do it. And we'll have to see next year who can actually test them.
What about then going into this David De Gea movement, Simon, in terms of Manchester United? You wouldn't want to let arguably one of the best young keepers in Europe go for nothing, obviously, but everybody seems to think that he's destined to be coming to the Spanish capital this summer. And what does that do then for Navas?
Well, I mean, I don't think that really David Hare would need to move in terms of for ambition, because I do think that under Mourinho, obviously, slowly United are sort of getting there. Obviously, their route into the Champions League hasn't been the most conventional, but they're still making progression. I'm sure that they'll make some big signings, and there's plenty of ambition and money behind that. So, I mean, you look at Real Madrid and you think that the positions where they would maybe need to strengthen in the summer would probably be in goal, potentially, because Keylor Navas, he's been brilliant in the last couple of months, but there have been some question marks over the course of the season. And I would say De Gea is probably a bit more of a complete goalkeeper than Navas, because he can do these, you know, pull off these amazing reflex saves, which Navas can manage, but maybe he's that little bit more consistent. And I'd say the other is kind of down to whether Pepe leaves or not. I mean, he's still kind of been, his future's kind of put on hold. He said that he'd be happy to stick around, and he will wait until the very last day to see if Real Madrid will give him another deal. So I could maybe see another centre-back coming in or something like that. But with De Gea, I think he'd definitely be an improvement on Navas. They'd probably have to spend quite big to land him. I mean, the figures can go from anything from £60 million upwards. He would easily become probably the most expensive goalkeeper of all time if he was to move. And I think for Zidane, you can look at the squad that he's got. The question mark would be over, for me, maybe a third or fourth choice centre-back and then a goalkeeper. And if he can keep hold of the rest of the squad, he's got players such as Marcos Llorente to come back from a loan who can slot in midfield. If they sign Theo Hernandez, that kind of covers them at left-back and allows Nacho to play a bit more in a central position. So, yeah, I mean, De Gea, I think he'd be wonderful, a really good signing. But it just depends whether they're going to end up shelling out a lot of money to improve on a position where Navas, he's really going to believe that, you know, the first choice gloves should be his after how he's performed the last month.
Oh, sorry, one of the rumours that would maybe kind of work out for everybody, obviously Jose Mourinho is a big fan of Alvaro Morata, whose future might not be there, so there could be a Morata-De Gea some money deal going on there, which would be maybe beneficial for everybody.
But don't you just pull the Real Madrid card, like you get Real Madrid and Barcelona? As soon as they come looking at a player, the player's suddenly unsettled for the next however many months, and they might even get him at a cut price. You know, De Gea will, if Madrid come knocking, will surely answer the call regardless.
Well, I was in Stockholm for the Europa League final, and obviously talking to a lot of the guys that cover Manchester United there and asking about De Gea and what his future is, and a lot of them told me that he could leave. Like, it's not going to be like last time where it's like, no, we want him to stay. He's not asked to leave. He's not unhappy or anything like that. But if you've got a Real Madrid coming in with a decent offer, then there's the likelihood that they'll just take it.
Yeah.
So,
and is there a chance that Navas is going to go in the opposite direction? Because that was what was touted a couple of years ago. And I don't think it would be a bad deal for United if they had Morata and Navas and a bit of cash for a goalkeeper.
I would have thought they'd maybe even look at Oblak. There's been rumours that he could be tempted away from Atletico Madrid this summer, and I think Oblak is showing that he's a phenomenal goalkeeper, right up kind of Mourinho Street, as an ideal replacement.
I really couldn't see Oblak moving. I mean, with the TAS decision, I don't see how Simeone would want to be left with Miguel Angel Moya for a full season. I mean, it'd have to be a serious amount of money, because Moya, when Oblak was out injured with that shoulder problem for a few weeks, I mean, Moya was making all kinds of mistakes. He can't command his area. I mean, that'd be, if you were to sell someone like Oblak, I mean, if I was Griezmann, I would then be thinking, well, I was prepared to stay and hang around, and we were prepared to keep the group together. I think selling a big player for Atletico, it would do a lot more harm than good, especially when you can only replace him with Moya, who he's a good professional and he's a good backup, but they really cannot have him for a full campaign.
I like that. That's a very kind of politically correct way of saying, yeah, he's rubbish.
Backhanded compliment, good professional.
Yeah, it's the same as he's got a great personality kind of thing. Not a look of it, he's a good personality, this guy. Yeah, he's all right. Let's move on then to quickly to Atletico Madrid, though, because you kind of look then at this side. You're talking about it would be almost suicidal for them, Simon, to get rid of Oblak, and Griezmann kept the band together and for one last crack at it, but it didn't pay off. And surely now you're looking at Atletico Madrid side going into the future. Are you thinking, oh no, actually we can do one more year of it, or is this the point when self-interest starts to kick in? Because obviously the Griezmann rumours have been flying around for the last few months, and they're only going to heighten as the summer continues and we all start struggling for what else we can talk about in the transfer windows and the speculation. But this Atletico Madrid side seems, I think, to have peaked, and perhaps now change needs to come in, and perhaps it's going to be drastic and they're going to drop back down to being one of those selling clubs again.
I mean, for me, I would think that when you've had both Griezmann and then also Lucas Hernandez, who's been linked with maybe a move to Manchester City, when both of those have taken to social media on Instagram and they've shared saying, like, all of us together, that whole kind of message, to me, I kind of saw that as the end of the potential for a move this summer. And that's not to say that it might not happen in January or next summer, but I just think that these players are very aware that if they leave... I mean, as it is, I think it's really stunted their growth with this ban from being able to sign players up. And obviously, it's not an ideal scenario for these players who really want to be winning trophies. Griezmann has said himself that, you know, that they're getting to the final stages of a lot of big competitions, but then they're just kind of falling at the final hurdle, and they need to do something about that. But, I mean, for me, that those social media posts, I think it kind of just shows that, you know, they're prepared to have this one more year. If the likes of Sandro or Alexander Lacazette are prepared to, you know, sign and then wait for 6 months until January, the talk seems to be that Sandro would be more open to doing that than Lacazette, then maybe they can salvage their season. But at the moment, I would say that in terms of, you know, what might happen next year, I'd say that Atletico's season is kind of dangling over the rubbish bin, as it were. And if someone was to leave, then it would be their season, before it even began, it would have to be a failure. If they were to lose someone like Griezmann, it's so many goals, it's so much creativity, and it's not just going forward. I mean, he tracks back, he wins back a lot of balls for Atletico in their own half, and he really embodies that spirit and that terrier-like presence on the pitch that, you know, Simeone's managed to cultivate over the years. So for me, I cannot see anyone leaving. I mean, if they did, I think it would really be, you know, a knife in the back, and Atletico fans would probably be burning shirts on social media if they did it.
But surely, be the sceptical Scotsman in here, Don, in terms of an Instagram post saying, I'm sticking around. I remember Fabian Delph did that, and then 2 days later was holding a Manchester City shirt in an Instagram post. So, I mean, surely that sort of thing doesn't necessarily mean players are going to stick around or anything like that, if we're going to be cynical about football, which... It's quite often quite fun to be as well. So
yeah, it happens everywhere. Paul Pogba did exactly the same. Are you leaving Juventus? No, I'm going to stay here. And then a week later, the Manchester United are announcing a signing. So it's a difficult one for him, whether or not he stays or whether or not he goes. Like, I think him and Simeone would maybe like to open up the new stadium together and see what happens. I think Simon's right. If they sell any of their big players with this transfer ban, then that's it for the season. This is just a write-off there and then. So I wouldn't read anything into what he says and what he doesn't say, because until the transfer deadline's finished, that's when you know he's going to stay.
You know the Atletico Madrid transfer saga is going to continue right the way through the summer, and you can catch all of it on marca.com/EN, at Marca in English on Twitter as well, and get onto the Facebook, on the search engine on Facebook, and use Marca in English, like and subscribe, and you'll get all of the updates on Atletico Madrid as we go through the summer. Let's move away from the Spanish capital then. Talk a little bit about Barcelona, Mark, in terms of their season. Managed to finish with a relatively comprehensive victory in the Copa del Rey final against Alaves, which... we'll say I obviously predicted, as most people did, even though some people thought it was going to be tighter than we all thought. Not so much. Doesn't really salvage a season, particularly when a week later Madrid go and add the European Cup to the Liga title, and kind of puts a dampener on things for Barcelona. And then they've got the managerial change as well, with Luis Enrique gone and Valverde coming in. Your thoughts on how this is going to move Barca forward?
On the Copa quickly, most of the Barcelona fans were more thinking about which of their ex-presidents were getting arrested the week before the... So that was kind of more in their minds as to who was next, basically. The thing is going forward is that with Valverde in charge, I mean, he's not done it at a big club yet. He's been to, obviously, like, you know, Athletic Club and everything, are quite decent-sized clubs, but he's not been to
Olympiacos.
Well, a lot of people have won
Greek,
things at Olympiacos.
That Super League is hardly touted, isn't it?
We won't bring Paul Merson into this debate. But the thing is that when...
please, let's never bring Paul Merson into a debate.
We know what he thinks about it. But the thing is with Valverde is it's kind of like, I think, of when Alex Ferguson left Man United, is that Ferguson had a successful final season, but the squad that he left behind was kind of on the way down. Luis Enrique had a relatively successful season, probably in terms of two seasons, it wasn't as successful. But he's left a squad that isn't, it hasn't got much momentum. You're not looking at players like Andre Gomes and Denis Suarez and saying they had a fantastic end to the season that they can carry on into next season. A lot of them ended it pretty limp. No, you say that Umtiti did well, but I wouldn't say that Pique or Iniesta or Neymar or even Suarez were on great form at the end of the season. So looking as to where they're going to improve, it's probably going to be more of the same from last summer. They're going to sign, you know, decent young players and hope that they turn into world-class players and hope that Andre Gomes and Umtiti, etc., in themselves become world-class players. But I don't think that there's any certainty that they're going to be improving next year. There's certainly no one asset that I would say Valverde has that will drag them further up than Luis Enrique could.
Well, Valverde's made a kind of obviously a fair few statements already since getting the job, obviously in his press conference, etc. It was interesting about how both he and Lionel Messi said that the objective is to win everything, which is obviously quite a big goal, but you'd expect any Barcelona manager to come out with that as the objective, particularly after the season Real Madrid have had with four arguably major trophies in the added to the title to the cabinet this season. But he's talking about not sacrificing the Barcelona style, which references perhaps that we're not going to really see a change to anything of how they try and play the game, which is what a lot of people wanted Sampaoli to come in and do and mix things up and shake it up a bit. He said that he understands how important Lionel Messi is in this side, which again just seems like another, I'm going to end up basing it all around Messi, because keeping Messi happy is what keeps Barcelona going. And he wants to be as close to the squad and have a really tight-knit relationship with the players. But it's all the same thing that we hear time and time again, you know, ever since Pep Guardiola. It's a tried and tested message that is now starting to fall apart because they don't have that depth and that squad quality.
Well, I was with Jason Pettigrew, who's a regular on the show in Cardiff, and I was talking to him about Valverde and what he's going to bring to Barcelona. And one of the kind of aspects I thought would be interesting to see how he does manage Messi, because relating it to Zidane and Real Madrid, Zidane's obviously got that cult of personality and he was such a great player, he can command that respect. And like what you were saying, Mark, about Valverde, I mean, what has he done really in terms of winning trophies? I mean, almost all that squad at Barcelona has won more trophies than he has and bigger trophies. So can he go in there and say to Messi, right, you're not going to play for the next couple of weeks, so I want you rested for this big game or the Clásico, or I want you to kind of take it easy at the start so you're fresher for the end of the season. He'll obviously be able to say he wants to do that. Will it be heeded by the club? And by Messi is a different thing. Ronaldo obviously took the advice from Zidane on board. And then you've got...
Not instantly as well. It took Ronaldo a little bit of time as well, because he got substituted at Las Palmas and was not happy about it earlier in the season. And Messi, I think, would be even less happy about
exactly.
It.
Can that work? Can they make it work? That's a big question for me.
That is always the question now with Barcelona, as Messi has become, dare I say it, considered bigger than the club at times.
Oh, I can hear the comments of people typing away already.
But it's true. He just has this perceived aura around it of it always, the line that always seems to crop up every few months or so is keep Messi happy, Barcelona will be happy. And those are in like the opinion pieces that we see. What do you need to do to succeed at Barcelona? Messi's smiling. If Messi's smiling, MSN will be firing. If MSN are firing, we're all good. We can score as many goals as we need to. I just think that needs to, considering, as you mentioned, Mark, the way everything's dropped off this season in terms of the quality of performances at the end of the year. You know, Neymar was in that great streak around the PSG ties and then suddenly completely dropped off. Suarez went away. It has to be more than MSN, because you can't rely on those three, because that's what they've done for the last 2 years and it's not quite paid off. You know, that was the downfall we had at the back end of last season. They looked tired, they looked drained, they've been over-relied on. Now it's time to actually go and build a squad again, as opposed to having a group of elite seven or eight players that are guaranteed in your starting 11 and then filling in the gaps everywhere. I think that's where Barcelona have gone wrong, and it's a big overhaul that Valverde does.
I mean, I'd add quickly that the problem they had last summer was that they knew they needed replacements for the MSN, and they actually went and signed a replacement for Suarez in Paco Alcácer. And if they're gonna, again, they have to find someone who's more like Neymar, more like Messi, and sign someone to back them up as well. And then that's the way that they'll find a route forward.
Go on, Simon.
I think what's quite interesting is that when Valverde has said that he's looking to keep the Barcelona way of playing, I mean, you could take it as, maybe he's not looking to do anything too reactionary, nothing revolutionary. But I think one of the big arguments this season has been that Luis Enrique has kind of lost that essence of how Barcelona are thought to play. They've kind of bypassed the midfield a bit more. They've been a bit more direct than maybe they would have been in previous years under Pep Guardiola. So it's interesting that Valverde might potentially be saying, you know, that maybe they're going to wind the clock back a little bit. Maybe they're going to be a bit more balanced and rely a bit more heavily on the midfield, because Enrique, he's been kind of at the centre of this whole question of whether Barcelona have the same footballing identity anymore. So with Valverde saying these kind of things, it could be that he's aware of that and he wants to, you know, give Barca fans the team that they want to watch play. And I think that that sort of bodes well for the summer, because one of the big problems, I think, has been the fact that the midfield three, I mean, it's been quite uncertain. They've rotated them quite a lot. You would say, obviously, that Busquets is a really key player, but Iniesta, they'll need a replacement for him in the coming years. Ivan Rakitic, he's been in and out of the side. So I think Valverde, he could really look to kind of balance the squad a bit more, rely a bit more on his midfield, and obviously that will depend on what signings they bring in. But it could really see Barcelona playing much nicer football, I think. And I think even if, you know, Mark said that it will be this period of transition, I think Barca fans this season, they've watched them win a trophy that perhaps many fans don't care about so much, while also playing football that's been so heavily reliant on Messi in the front three that maybe isn't that aesthetically pleasing. So maybe Barca fans would be happy to sort of sacrifice, maybe win just one trophy again, but have a team that, you know, they can be proud of and that they feel really does actually represent them.
I think one issue for the summer in terms of how we can rebuild the squad is the fact that they're going to need to sell a couple of big players to pay for Messi's contract. Mm. So that really then limits what you can do in the transfer window. So there's obviously that he's got to manage as well, which it doesn't sound like it's going to be very easy for him, to be honest. We've just sat there and said it's going to be hard. It's going to be really difficult.
Walking into a bit of a firestorm in terms of, and especially as you say, he doesn't have the clout of other managers around the world to come into a club like that and start throwing his weight around. He's going to have to make some very difficult decisions. Graham Ruthven on Marca.com/EN has written a really interesting opinion piece that I cannot recommend enough that people go and have a look about, whether he's the right man for the job at the moment, Valverde. Quickly, because we are running out of time on the show here, Dov, is he the right man for the job at the moment at Barca?
I personally don't think so.
Mark?
Long term, yes.
Simon?
I think yes. I mean, I think it's being quite disrespectful to kind of belittle what he's done, because he's managed quite a bit in Spain. And obviously, unless you're managing Barcelona or Real Madrid, you're not going to be winning the title or big trophies with regularity. So I think the fact that, you know, he's with Athletic, he won them their first title in 31 years. They've had this back-to-back consecutive qualification for Europe. I think it's kind of a run. They hadn't really managed to stay in Europe for this long since maybe like the 1930s or 40s. So he's had these achievements, but they've just not been, you know, your big, shiny major trophies. And this is the first time that he's going to have the chance to have a squad that can really, you know, make a pass at them. So it's interesting. I mean, I think personally he's the best option that they've had out of what has been available. And I think he can be a success. But obviously, as we've all made quite clear, it's definitely not going to be easy.
I'm thinking David Moyes.
Oh, yeah.
Big Sam Allardyce.
I was thinking David Moyes was really good at Everton and went to the big club and then completely
didn't get a chance really properly as well in his time in Spain. So I think, yeah, he deserves that second crack at it, because he's got experience as a La Liga manager, Moyes, too. So, yeah, I could definitely see that happening at Barca, obviously.
He needs a job, so you never know. He could take it easy for a few weeks, recharge his batteries, and then head off to the camp now. And then you're
Alan Pardew needs a job, and I would not be handing that one out.
Oh, can you imagine Pardew doing that Pardew shuffle at the Camp Nou when they get
he'd
a third?
He'd be turning up
Madrid
in like tan shorts every week with like socks and sandals. He'd be
Tony
like a British tourist.
Or Tony Pulis as well. I say, right, Lino, just stay up top and we'll just get it. We'll kick the ball up to you. It'll be fine.
Yeah, they'll go looking for the Tinker Man in Ranieri. That'll be the one. And the whole Barca system will collapse, much like Leicester's
did
this
season. Bring
Jamie
Vardy and that'll sort them out.
Right, let's take a quick look around the rest of La Liga very quickly before we go and depart for the summer, should I say. There's been plenty of managerial changes already. Sampaoli, of course, has taken the Argentina job, which was not a very well-kept secret by the end of the season, of course. Sevilla bringing Berizzo from Celta Vigo, had a good year with Celta, was lauded for their appearances in the Copa del Rey this season, of course, knocked out Real Madrid. Berizzo, though, it's difficult to go to Sevilla after Sampaoli. It's such a hard person to kind of walk into their shoes and have that same impact on a squad, but a right man for the job perhaps, Mark, in terms of his ability to get the best out of an average squad at Celta.
I think he's certainly worth a punt. I don't think I'd have picked anyone else. I wouldn't have picked someone like Quique Setién to come in instead of him. The problem that he had, if you listen to his press conferences at Celta, he was constantly annoyed by just the lack of quality that Celta had in getting that extra little push to become a Europa League consistently qualifying team. And Sevilla, you'd have to say their squad is generally a little bit better than Celta's, but it did perform above its limits in the last season. So I think he's got more of a chance of bringing that up if they can sign good players, etc. Then that will help them out. And I think he's probably the best man for the job they had available.
A shame to see Sampaoli go just for the entertainment on the sideline. I mean, Sampaoli and Simeone in the same kind of technical areas was always enjoyable to watch. Simon, just quickly, Celta Vigo bring Juan Carlos Unze, the Barcelona assistant, who some thought could actually be in line for taking the top job this season. But instead, obviously, it's gone to Valverde. And Bilbao then go and bring up one of their youth coaches in Jose Angel Ziganda. I mean, do you like the idea of promoting from within, or do you prefer the idea of somebody like Unze getting a crack at Celta Vigo and kind of learning the trade in the big job elsewhere?
I think with the Ziganda, I think that was a big... I think it was almost a no-brainer, really. I mean, with Athletic relying so heavily on their Lezama Academy... The best thing to do was to go for, you know, a manager that's been there for about, I think it's 6 years, in charge of the B team. He's always on the training pitch. In his presentation, he was just very much saying he's the happiest when he's on the training field. He's got a great relationship with the squad. He's the happiest guy in the camp, all that kind of thing. So I think for a team that relies so heavily on their academy, he had to be the man for the job. For Celta, I think that maybe their fans might be a little bit disappointed, but at least, obviously, Unze, he was an assistant under Luis Enrique. He will know the club. I think he's got ideas about his squad already. There's been a lot of talk that he just isn't happy with John Guidetti and they'll be looking to replace him. There's been a few players like Carles Planas who have already been let go. So I think that Unze is kind of, he's got an idea of what he wants his Celta to be like, and I think that's quite important. He's not really been hanging around and waiting for, you know, things to fall apart and then look to correct things. He's been quite proactive. And there have been quite a few big fees thrown around in terms of Celta bringing in players. They've got Maxi already confirmed. Irving Lozano, who's quite an exciting young Mexican player, they've been linked with him. But the fact that the price tags linked to these players are sort of 10 million euros, 15 million euros, it does make you wonder whether they'll need to have a big sale. And if someone along the lines of Aspas were to leave, then that would be possibly irreparable damage. So it's definitely a tough job for Unze in his first senior role, yeah.
Can't afford to lose Aspas after the season he had with Celta Vigo this year. Just finally, gentlemen, then, your thoughts on what's going to be cropping up this summer in terms of player movement, in terms of what we like. I mean, Mark's already making predictions and saying that the Liga title race for next year is over and done with Madrid going to win it. Dov, in terms of the summer, what are you keeping an eye out for in the 2 months or so?
Well, the Griezmann transfer saga is going to be interesting. And then just what happens at Atletico if somebody leaves or if they do manage to keep it together. And who Real Madrid had? Because it's a presidential election year.
Yeah, there's going to be a massive temptation for Galactico.
So that means that there's going to be a big, massive signing. Who it is, we don't know yet. De Gea seems like we mentioned before, the kind of number one target, if you like, in terms of a big name player.
Is that a big enough name to be a Galactico, though? A goalkeeper? It's not
Spanish, though. I think that helps. That helps, doesn't it?
Spanish number one. As long as it costs a fortune, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'll just have the big pile of money in front of them and then they'll send it off to Manchester.
What about yourself, Mark?
Well, Kylian Mbappe is the one that a lot of people are talking about. I don't think he's going to go. I think he'll have one more year at Monaco, potentially maybe do something stupid like sign a pre-contract agreement, but I still doubt that. Then again, it is a big question mark because there's not one position that I would say Real Madrid really need to improve in. If they're going to sell Morata, then they'll need a striker. But again, I'm not sure they're going to sell Morata. So
there's a fair few people that will be, you know, battering down the door and taking a pay cut as well to be involved in that side of that quality, even if it is to be a backup. And unless you've got that massive ego, which is probably what Real Madrid don't need at this point.
Yeah, and I think Zidane prefers signing or bringing through the academy players like Vallejo, Llorente. So I'm not entirely sure that they'll go much further than De Gea.
It'd be interesting.
And Theo Hernandez, obviously.
Still not convinced that he's going to be moving De Gea. Yeah, don't say it yet.
We've got all these predictions ready for the start of the season. You've got Real Madrid winning the league. You've got you saying De Gea's not going to be there and me saying that Valverde's going to be like David Moyes.
Simon, what about yourself? What do you keep an eye out over this summer, mate?
I think, even though, you know, I'm obviously here, so maybe I'm biased, but I think Valencia, it's a big summer for them. Marcelino's come in. He's really demanding. He knows that he wants to, you know, build a squad for himself, and he wants them to have the right values and to be really disciplined and everything. So I think they've really got to get their business right. I think his appointment has been the best thing they could have hoped for the fans and getting them on the right track. But if it's not been backed up with signings, then Marcelino has already shown that, you know, he's prepared to be quite a difficult personality if he doesn't get what he wants. So I think they're definitely a club outside of, you know, the big three or four that to keep an eye on.
That was going to be my other question for Mark, actually, if he was making predictions today, of how many managers would Valencia go through next season?
It depends if they put Zaza on penalty duty. If they keep him away from it, then they'll be fine.
Yeah, but we'll go with a nice baker's dozen, shall we, for managers at Valencia for next season. Guys, been a great season to cover the League of Football. Really exciting and thrilling. Thanks so much for all the effort that you've all put in. Mark Mayo, at that Mark Mayo. Still needs to be changed to the Mark Mayo or something like that. But cheers, mate. Always appreciate the time, fella. Dov, for coming in today, really appreciate it, and giving us the green light to do the podcast this season, mate.
Pleasure, as always.
Always a pleasure, never a chore hang out with the boss.
What is it, appearance number two, I think.
Number two, yeah, you did one earlier in the season, yeah. When we were talking a little bit about Italian football again at one point. And Simon as well, out in Valencia, nobody's jealous or anything about that. At Simon H Football on Twitter, you can follow him. Really appreciate the time, mate. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been great all season. Thanks for hosting them all.
Cheers, mate. Always a pleasure. Never a chore to chat with you fine folks.
That's what we can see. We should thank Ollie, because he's the one that does this and edits it and puts it together and writes his notes sometimes. and he's getting to get everybody organised. So obviously...
Oh, this just cuts out the prep that I have to do for match days if I'm covering any Spanish football on the coming weekend. So I just ask all the questions that I need for the game. You know, it was really interesting one week. We've paid a lot of attention to Celta Vigo Villarreal, that game that was coming up. Oh, it was crazy.
You'll just go on next time on the TV and be like, yeah, so Real Madrid are definitely going to win the league next year. I've got my sources.
They've told us that. David Moyes as well being linked with the Barcelona, I'm hearing. Yeah, don't worry about that. Remember, you can get all of the info, including David Moyes' rumoured trip to the Catalan capital, on marca.com/EA. Again, at Marca in English on Twitter. That's at Marca in English, all one word. And Marca in English on Facebook. Like and subscribe and get all of the feed from there as well. We will be back maybe at some point in the summer, but definitely at the start of next season. A big thanks for listening. Until next time, have a very good one and enjoy all the football. There's not much of it this summer, so we might as well get as much of it as we can. Cheers, guys.